is the Go Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, IVF, nutrition, gut health, and much more, as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say that this podcast is sponsored by Emma. Emma mattresses are created by an in-house team of sleep experts who use only the best foams and the latest foam technologies. The Emma products are designed with you in mind and sure to have you waking up feeling energetic and refreshed. For a limited time, listeners of the Good Glow Health podcast can save a massive 42% on orders placed through emma-mattress.ie/podcast. You can find these links in this episode's description. Today we're talking about sleep on the Good Glow Health. Deirdre McSweeney, a sleep technologist and expert in her field, talks to me about everything we need to know. She explains how we should wait for a sleepy signal to go to bed and the importance of sleep hygiene. We also speak about good quality sleep, the different stages of it, and what to do if you have trouble falling asleep or if you wake for hours at night. Deirdre speaks about why some of us can't sleep on Sunday nights, how much sleep our kids should be getting, and if beauty sleep is a real thing. Deirdre McSweeney, sleep technologist and cognitive behaviour therapist for insomnia. Welcome to the Good Glow Health.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is such a fascinating subject and we were chatting before we came on air. I think we could have chatted for hours together. It's been so nice to get to know you briefly. But what you do is so important and I think it's really important to address sleep and to understand it better. So thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
I wanted to start with, I suppose, probably a very basic question for you, but why is it important for us to get a good night's sleep?
Okay. Well, one of the things I hate to hear in there is looking for the good night's sleep, because one way or the other, sleep happens. It's as simple as the turn of the planet. The globe turns from light to dark. We turn from sleep to wake. And it is as simple as that. And of course, our sleep is one of the simplest pieces of biology in our entire system, because if we let it, it runs all by itself. Mm-hmm. We don't have to look for it. Some people do, and I'll come back to that. But we don't have to kind of plan on it. In fact, that's the worst possible thing you can do, because if I could say one thing, there is no such thing as kind of looking for sleep or trying to sleep. It's either there or it's not. And we should be able to answer the sleep need question by realizing what is sleepiness as distinct from tiredness, because they are two very distinct categories. Tiredness, exhaustion, all that terminology we use to suggest, when you've had your busy day at work, you've attended to the domestic when you come in, you have those magic moments of must sit down and catch the news headlines at whatever time it is. You suddenly feel tired, worn out. You're home, you're safe, you're secure. So often people feel quite gently drowsy and feel themselves drowsing off. That is actually the wrong time to sleep, but it is an indication that you're nearly getting there.
Okay.
Because sleep is driven by two processes. One is called the homeostatic drive and the other is called the circadian rhythm. I'm trying to impress you here, you see, with scientific language. Yeah. The basic thing is that you should be getting a sleepy signal appropriately. Because as I was beginning to define, the difference between tiredness and exhaustion and feeling wiped out and run down is that it's your body telling you you need a break. If you've been, even after hours or whatever, working on a screen to try and book a Ryanair flight for when the airports are eventually open next year, and suddenly you sit back and you think, I saw this is confusing me. Or you've been out on all fours out in your garden trying to weed that little bed to put in your winter potatoes or whatever, you suddenly sit back on your hunkers and realise you've done enough. Mm. So tiredness is satisfied by taking a break or a rest. It does not demand sleep, whereas sleepiness should be almost irresistible. There is nothing else you can think of doing except lying in under that duvet. So homeostatic drive is where you get that signaling that it's nearly time to sleep. And circadian rhythm means it should be appropriate to the clock. So you shouldn't be getting a sleepy signal at, say, 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the evening and take yourself off to bed at that time, because it's simply not appropriate. There's still light in the sky, and that will work against your body in terms of managing the type of sleep you get.
If you get a sleepy signal at lunchtime, could that be an indication of something else, like dehydration or hunger?
Exactly. We often say that. You know, people who talk about that dip in the day, and in fact, my own dip is always around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's called the postprandial dip. It's very real in the human. It goes back to us being cave people. You know, the men had been out on the drive, out, you know, trying to capture an animal that they're all going to savage into when they bring it back to the cave where the women have kept the fire going. Then when everything is gobbled up, you have a nice little snooze under the tree to actually get the benefit of that food, to leave you on alert for the rest of your day and night, because life was so very much primed on that. So, yeah, a dip like you're describing can be needing a breath of fresh air, getting out of a stuffy office, having a couple of glasses of water, or as you say, needing your lunch.
Mm-hmm. And what defines a good sleep then? Is it different for everybody, or is it a certain amount of hours? Is it, you hear these things, it's better to go to bed 2 hours before midnight then have a 2 hour lie on, and all of these kind of myths.
And that's exactly what they are. You're dead right. Mm-hmm. They are myths. I mean, I grew up with this old crone of an aunt that used to shake her finger at myself and my sisters to say, girls, an hour in bed before midnight is worth two after.
Yes,
there is no known physiological reason for that to happen or be known about at all. Sleep is very organized as a process that, as I say, runs all by itself. So just very briefly, the structure of sleep runs thus that when you get that lovely sleepy signal and get into bed, there's that delicious feeling where you're beginning to lose touch with your environment. You're on the slide off into sleep. It's called stage one. It's the entry point into sleep, which leads you into stage two sleep. Now, I should point out that within Europe, the French and the Finns are the ones doing an awful lot of sleep research that is well written up. And, you know, we all attend these conferences and stuff to pick up these gems of information. Stage two sleep, it has been found, is exceedingly important for the workings of our brain. And that is our brain as another physical organ. So our intellectual platform is refreshed in there. We know memories are consolidated in stage two sleep. Our emotional fragility or liability is managed in stage two sleep. Runs all by itself. Then it continues to drive you straight down into stage three sleep, which is deep, truly restorative sleep. Mm-hmm. That's when an awful lot of our systems reset themselves at night in sleep. And they would be things like temperature control. And of course, us women have another profile, if you like, in the field of sleep medicine because of our hormonal profile. There's nearly more books written about women and sleep than there is about other topics within the sleep field. So temperature control is in there. Our metabolic rate is reset in there in stage three sleep, where we produce these contradictory processes, really, as is everything in our body. It's an opposite movement. It's a push-pull movement within our body. So the push-pull in terms of managing our metabolic rate is the production of leptins and ghrelins. One is something that gives you an appetite. You are supposed to get up in the morning and raise your blood sugar within about 2 hours of being up so that you can attack the day. But conversely, in the evening, you should be able to push that really full plate of pasta away from you because you've had enough. So you have that control. So lots of those systems are reset in stage three sleep. After a period in there, we then come up almost to the surface. That's when we're recording it in a sleep lab. We know this. Almost to the surface again, where we have the first of our dream periods. First one is only 3 to 4 minutes long.
And would that be considered light sleep?
Stage one is light sleep. You're stepping into sleep.
Yes.
And a lot of people, I have to say, who attend me, Georgia, tell me, they know when I'm talking like this to them, they say, oh, yeah, I know I must be in stage one all night. Sorry. You know, nobody can. Nobody can. A simple exercise I get people to sort of think about is, when we record, when I've been recording people in a sleep lab, because that was my job, stage one sleep, were I to be at people's bedroom door and even whisper their name, they'd alert to full wakefulness again.
Okay.
But if I didn't continue calling them, they'd slip back down again and start to drive themselves into stage two. Mm-hmm. In stage two sleep, people wouldn't hear me calling them at the door. I'd have to come over to their shoulder and tip, or over to their bedside and tip them on the shoulder, because they're much further down. Mm-hmm. And stage three sleep, I'd need to bring in Bono or Andreas Bocelli to wake them out of that. And they wouldn't know who the hell they were for a couple of minutes when they would come out of stage three sleep. They're that far down. OK, but your question about REM sleep, I described it as almost being at the surface again. The one point to be made about REM sleep is that all of these magical pictures are running through our heads, but our body is actually technically paralyzed. And this is Mother Nature protecting us from acting out our dreams. So that process I've just described is called a cycle of sleep. We have about 4 or 5 cycles of sleep like that during the night. But our dreams get longer as the night proceeds. And our longest one is towards morning. And if you're going to ever remember your dreams, not that it matters, that's the one you're going to remember, because it's kind of arousability is intruding onto that sleep period, if you know what I mean. So there's two very nice things to know about sleep and how that process goes on. And that is that we have most of our stage three sleep in the first third or the first half of our night.
Okay.
And that's the wonderful thing about sleep, as I say, almost running all by itself, if we let it at it. We have most of the good stuff in the earlier part of the night, because your sleep is much more fragmented, gently fragmented towards morning, being disturbed by all these dreams. So the one word you mentioned there in your question to me was, you know, about wondering what our quality of sleep is like. I have to say my own stress in my own practice is always about quality over quantity, because I much prefer to hear that people are having, say, rock solid 5 and a half hours sleep a night than wondering if they're going to make the magic 7.5 to 8 hours. But I mean, what's the point of that if you're tossing and turning, trying to get back to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So quality is much better to consider initially, and then let your sleep quantity grow bigger if you can.
So how do you know when you wake up if you've had a good quality sleep?
The $10,000 question, isn't it? Sleep should run in a very comfortable way for you, that it's not upsetting you or annoying you in terms of distress or anxiety within your bed time or bed space. We all move quite a lot in sleep. You know, people sometimes say to me, but God, I feel just as whacked when I get up in the morning as when I go to bed. And sure enough, you often find partners are reporting, you know, a bit of thrashing about and stuff. So you've had a couple of lively dreams, but so what? Sleep quality is not necessarily determined by how you feel in the morning.
Okay.
Because that's the funny bit about sleep, actually, Georgia, when you think of it. It's a most subjective topic. What we all could decide was a good night's sleep last night could be poles apart from each other if we were been measured. So it's how we perceive the day and daytime functioning that sometimes is an indicator of good or bad sleep.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Well, it is in a way, but I also like to use it against people in another sense, in that sort of saying, just because you're having a crappy day at work doesn't mean last night was a horrible night's sleep.
Mm.
You know, there are lots of other reasons why things are going wrong in the day. The crowd that you normally work with that are gorgeous could be acting like a shower of plonkers just today. But that's you and your perception of them, rather than there being something wrong with your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
OK, the whole ambition in terms of sleep is Within reason, to keep it regular, you know, keep to a kind of nice, well, particularly for people who do Monday to Friday's regular thing. And most people hate me saying the next thing, which is Monday to Friday, you're pivoting your sleep on the time you have to get up at in the morning a lot of the time. But there's no point in counting backwards. You know, just because you have to be on the 7:15 Lewis doesn't mean, I have to do the mathematics. I better be in bed by 11:15 and asleep by 30. It doesn't work like that. Just answer your own body's call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what people often talk about in terms of their daytime functioning is just maybe a lot of stress that they have to cope with. And living with stress and living with anxiety is absolutely exhausting. Absolutely exhausting. So you really have to kind of manage everything. But the whole point is that regularity also pivots on what time you get up at in the morning. Mm. And at other talks that I give, I often say to people, even though you're doing the Monday to Friday and you have to be up at 7:15, well, really, you have to be up at the same time on a Saturday or Sunday. And most people balk at that, as you can imagine. But of course, a bit of a lie-in is actually allowed, if I can use that term, or put hyphens around my voice here. But it is a case that we have a condition called Sunday night insomnia. And Sunday night insomnia is based on the fact that people know they have a hectic week ahead of them, better get off to bed early tonight and get some sleep or whatever, or wait for the sleepy signal, it doesn't matter. But they hit the sack and one eye is on the clock, of course, and suddenly it's, God, I've been in bed at 11:30 and I'm still not asleep. Is it really only 10:50? I have to be on the, you know, and this pressure builds up about people feeling they have to get some sleep, etc. But the reason they can't get to sleep as promptly as they normally should is due to the fact that they had a lovely long lie-in on Saturday and possibly Sunday morning as well. Mm. So it works against you a lot of the time.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to tell you a little more about Emma. Made right here in Ireland, the Emma mattress comes with a 10-year guarantee and is delivered for free and straight to your front door. If you're not 100% convinced, you can return it hassle-free for a full refund. Try Europe's most awarded mattress now for 200 risk-free nights and discover the secret to a great night's sleep. The Emma mattress consists of three high-quality foams that perfectly adapt to your body to offer you the right amount of support, pressure relief and comfort, while the breathable materials help keep you cool even during the warmest nights. Just the thing you need to wake up feeling energetic and refreshed. Now, back to the conversation. Is there a difference? Is there a different category of people, the people who can't fall asleep and then the people who wake for hours in the night?
Yeah.
Because my husband has always had trouble sleeping, but his problem is falling asleep. Once he's asleep, he'll sleep for the night. Okay. But he tells himself that he can't sleep.
That's right.
And then that seems to be the problem.
Of course. Of course. Okay. Going back to that, first of all, and just to fix your husband straight off, just tell him to go to bed much later.
When he's tired, when he gets the sleepy
sleep. When he's sleepy, yeah.
He started to do that.
Good.
Because I'd say getting to bed.
No, but I mean really, I have to say really late. I mean, I have people falling off the armchair in my rooms when I sort of say, right, no bed for you from tonight till at least 12:30. What? What am I going to spend my time doing? I'm normally in bed at 11:15, you know.
Yeah.
And that feels like another half of a night that they have to entertain themselves. So the only way you can kind of cure that, if you like, is to understand that you really must truly get to the sleepy signal time.
Mm. And does that mean that if you stay up, say, till 12:30, one night, that the next night you'll be tired earlier and you're kind of resetting?
No, you stay up till 12:30 till I'm afraid I tell you to stop.
Okay.
It's until their sleep feels, yeah, God, I am now hitting into bed and getting straight off to sleep promptly. But I'm glad you asked me the question originally in the phraseology you used, because to give you the proper definition of insomnia, clinically speaking, it's defined as difficulties initiating or maintaining sleep that has become persistent. Mm. And the reason for the persistence a lot of the time is that people develop hatred for their bed, actually. I hate going up because I know I'm going to be tossing and turning. I know I'm... So we work on the premise that actually it's counterintuitive as to what I'm going to say next, which is we fix people's sleep by giving them a shorter sleep opportunity in their bed.
Okay. Before we came in, we were standing in the hall and I said, what is your favorite part of your job? Mm-hmm. And you said... I'll let you say it.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's just when people are finished with me, you know, and we've sorted everything out, because it's a case about restricting people's time in bed, first of all. And then once their sleep starts to sort itself, we let it grow bigger. We let the sleep period grow bigger. But I just love when people say to me, oh, Deirdre, why didn't I come to see you years ago? You know, or a couple of months ago or whatever, because that's exactly the thing. People develop a lot of stress, anxiety, irritation, frustration. I mean, even the way I'm saying it, my jaw is tightening, because there is nothing worse than being in bed and trying to get to sleep. Mm-hmm. It gives rise to all the negative emotions that we have. I mean, I often laugh and say Van Morrison had a single out last Christmas that was called The Dark Night of the Soul. And I mean, Van was able to talk about it in wonderfully historical terms. But actually, I have to say he's about four centuries too late, because the dark night of the soul has been written about since Renaissance times. And that is reflective of us humans. Our thought processing goes darker at night because it's reflecting the colour of the sky, really. Mm. I've yet to have somebody attend me in clinic, Georgia, who tells me they can't sleep because they're so utterly happy.
God. And I used to feel sorry for Jamie because I felt like he was really suffering. And nights can be so long and lonely if you're desperate for sleep, but you can't. And your partner is snoring away beside you.
I'm afraid he has to break that routine and get back up out of bed. Mm-hmm. The rule
is that it?
Yeah. The rule technically is if you're not asleep within 15 to 20 minutes, back down you go into the living room and do anything you like down there.
Watch TV,
including watching TV.
Okay.
Because TV is watched at a much further distance from your eye and your brain than a handheld device that many people use in their bedrooms, unfortunately.
And would it be the same if you say you wake in the night from 2 to 4, get up, change your environment?
Oh, completely. Yeah, because it's literally about facing up to the fact, if I'm not asleep in my bed, I shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm.
And I like what you said about people saying, I wish I'd come sooner, because people suffer in silence a lot of the time with this and for years on end.
Yeah.
And just to know that there is help available.
Sure. And just to put it in context, where this treatment plan comes out of is what is called the 3P model. So this is a model of behaviour that has been researched, turned inside out for 25, 30 years at this stage by the psychologists that put together the program within CBT for helping insomnia. And the 3Ps stand for, the first P is predisposing factors or characteristics about somebody. And you'll often hear people saying to me, oh yeah, sure. Every single morning we came down, even to go to school, mom would always ask you, well, how did you sleep last night? Because I was awake all night. Or, you know, it was discussed over the cornflakes.
Yeah.
From the, you know, so that kind of thing becomes embedded. Okay. The second P stands for a precipitating event. And I have to say, a lot of people come with the precise date almost as to when this problem with their sleep has arisen. I'm not a psychologist by training. I'm a sleep scientist. So I don't deal with some of the heavy duty psychology requirements needed in, for example, handling a really traumatic bereavement. Or we obviously uncovered a lot of financial ruin for people, or health issues and worries, etc., that people can have. So obviously there's a lot of other cognitive behavior therapists out there that manage, for example, anxiety or dealing with something like that. But it's just to know it's there. Mm-hmm. And then the third P is where I come in, I'm afraid. It's to cover what is called perpetuation. And that is, unfortunately, where people have, as you say, are coping for a long time with this sleep problem. And maybe they've developed a lot of maladaptive thinking habits as maladaptive actual habits that are driving sleep away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, with respect, brings us nicely to the topic of sleep hygiene, which I'd like to flash into very quickly for you, if I may.
I'd love to hear this.
Okay. Well, sleep hygiene covers two topics. One is the environmental factors that affect our sleep, and the other is the lifestyle factors. And the lifestyle factors simply are caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, diet, and exercise. So we all know about caffeine. It's a stimulant. It acts directly on our central nervous system. It's delicious. It comes in a cup, generally. So it's all the teas and the coffees. And I mean, I'm stressing tea as well. The thing most people don't like me telling you is that chocolate has caffeine in it. All the soft drinks generally have caffeine in them, hidden under another label, I have to say, because we could all trot down to the local under the tree at Spar down there and see shelves of things that declare themselves to be caffeine free or sugar free or whatever. Not necessarily so. So all I'm simply saying is, on the caffeine thing, read the labels mm-hmm. of anything you're going to take. Nicotine, of course, is a stimulant, and I'm often mildly amused at some of my patients that tell me they love that last relaxing fag before they go up to bed. It's not relaxing. Nicotine will raise your blood pressure by about 10 points and increase your heart rate a little bit. So it just means it's longer to come down to get off mm-hmm. into sleep. Diet is another interesting one. Recent research, and I'm saying recent, I'm talking 2-3 years away. Recent research has shown that a light snack a little bit before bed is recommended, actually. And I mean, we all have that romantic notion of the old aunt or granny going off up to bed with a glass of hot milk, etc. And I had a hilarious woman attending me. Nora was wonderful. She was 82 and really intellectually highly charged lady, still very much involved in international organizations and stuff. But I was wondering when she was attending me why Nora's diary wasn't showing that she was getting off to sleep as promptly as I thought she should, because she was bringing the glass of hot milk up to bed with her. And it was only on about the third visit she confessed to me that she was bringing 4 Jaffa cakes with the. So there was enough chocolate on that to stimulate her back into wakefulness.
Wow.
You know, so we just have to watch it. And I also want to blow one myth out of the water here for you, which is that cheese does not give you bad dreams.
Okay.
You know, you can have a slice of gorgeous Stilton on a couple of cream crackers if that's your little snack idea. Exercise is a key one. And I have to say, pre-COVID, you know, a lot of people who lived very busy lives of trying to juggle everything would come in from work, and perhaps the only time that they would have a chance to go to a gym or their exercise regime or the court was booked for either badminton or indoor football or whatever might have been quite late at night, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock even. You need to have at least an hour and a half to 2 hours from finishing exercise and showering, obviously, and getting to bed.
Okay.
Because you're going to bed still floating in your own endorphins mm-hmm. and that'll drive sleep away. So just, if possible, try and take exercise earlier in your evening.
Do you find that if people exercise during the day or whatever, whenever they decide to do it, that they will sleep better that night?
Well, I have to say that all the studies have shown that people who are fit have better quality sleep. Mm-hmm. Essentially, because we just know everything is in balance, you know, the body is really in a primed position to garner sleep at the right time and have the renewal present for them for taking on the next day.
Okay. And the other side of sleep hygiene then, is that your bedroom?
Yeah.
Your environment.
So cool and dark is the current mantra about bedrooms, and cool doesn't mean your funky decor, it means the temperature. We sleep better cooler. There's no doubt. And of course, some of these nights, even though we are complaining about our summer, but some of the nights are really stuffy and muggy and humid. And that just gives rise to much more restless sleep, more active body movements, and less dream type sleep, funny enough. A cold room will sometimes make it difficult to get off to sleep, November, December, whatever. But I often say to people, so what if you to wear bed socks going off to bed or wear mittens or something? You'll kick them off anyway as your body temperature readjusts during your sleep. Because believe it or not, our body temperature drops during our sleep at night and will only start to come up to normal when light comes into the sky in the morning.
Right.
Because you've often heard that expression, I'm sure. Oh, they were dead asleep. And sure enough, if you touch somebody who's fast asleep, even in under the duvet or the blankets, they'll feel cool.
Yes, that's so true.
It is, yeah. So light is another key one for the bedroom. Eliminate as much light from your window as is possible. If you're woken by early morning light, you know, you'll have to think about another layer. I often say to people just even experiment for a period of time by wearing a mask in bed or, and I mean, this was a patient suggestion, three refuse sacks. So you tuck them into the blind because there's no really perfect fitting blinds that mm-hmm. I've yet to find. Tuck one or two of them in the sides of the blind and then roll the other one along by your windowsill level just to eliminate light coming in those points, because light is the trigger to wakefulness.
Right. Okay.
Mattresses and pillows, of course, are people's own preference and call and stuff.
I think, well, in my marriage, buying a super king size bed was the best thing ever.
Actually, yeah, it's funny you should say
that.
That's right. It's funny you should say that. I had a lovely Spanish man attending me and he said the secret to his happy marriage, and they were married 61 years, was they had a king size bed from the word go. He said, I don't have to touch her.
That's so funny. Mm. Is beauty sleep a real thing?
No. Our skin, our hair, our brightness of our eyes, all our good, healthy features will all be present once we're getting a regular amount of sleep.
Yeah.
And I often say that to patients who come to me in ragged order, actually, George, you know, where they say they are so wrecked, they're so tired, they know their short period is so short and not doing them any good. And I'm sort of saying, how could you look as good as you do unless you're getting some sleep? Mm. And that's where a lot of the information about knowing how sleep hangs together is comforting for people. Knowing, for example, that we have, you know, our deepest and good quality stuff in the first third or first half of the night. Oh, I do get a couple of hours at the beginning. So that must be what's sustaining me. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about beauty sleep, but you can't call up sleep to make sure you don't have a breakout or a wedding coming up in 2 days.
In terms of children's sleep, how much sleep should our kids be getting?
A lot. Yeah, there's quite a bit of debate going on about this now. And of course, I have to say, and I'm just referring into COVID from the point of view of a lot of people's schedules are upset. Summer, you know, is there and they've been off school from, not holidays from school, but off school. And so kids are actually staying up later. And I mean, I'm talking older children here as well. Children and young babies need chunks of sleep, a tranche of sleep that's at least 10 hours at night, 10 to 12 hours at night. And they're probably still of the age that they need a nap during the day. Mm-hmm. The nap during the day should only be sort of shortened for kids that are not getting off to sleep promptly in the evening, even after a nice schedule like the bath or the storybooks or the warm drink or whatever. Right up to school starting time, there are certain children who still need that midday nap. Well, I'm saying midday, but it might be as late as 3 in the afternoon. So don't knock it, you know. Mm. And then the other end is the teenager group. They think they're invincible. They think they can stay up as late as they like and still be perfectly competent human beings the next day. And they can't, because actually the drive is that older children in this context, you know, the 13, 14, 15 year old onwards, right up into our mid to late 20s, need chunks of stage 3 sleep, the deep, truly restorative sleep, because that's where they're laying down their intellectual and physical capacity for the rest of their lives, actually, because our sleep is more or less set in us by the time we're in our mid-20s, and really should stay in that robust state for you right up into, you know, your 7th decade. When I started in sleep medicine first, we had always been told, you know, once you hit into your 60s, men and women, your sleep would change. Well, kind of now that I'm there, I now realize that's certainly not the case in the last 10 to 15 years, because people of my age group and beyond are doing much more intellectually challenging and physically challenging things in their lives than the previous generation. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother got into her widow's weeds when she was only in her late 50s. Whereas I have a 73-year-old friend that's hoping to do Kilimanjaro in September if she can get a flight out.
Wow.
No, but I'm just saying everything is possible now, you know. So sleep only changes in the later end of our lives in our 80s where people talk about being short sleepers.
Mm-hmm.
It's called advanced phase syndrome, where elderly people complain about being awake during the night or awake early. They're like, oh, I'm awake since 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock this morning. There's a very obvious reason why they are. Older people go to bed very early, far too early. They're in bed at nine, half nine to catch the news, bit of heat, warmth, security. I'll watch the other episode of The Crown there before they switch off. And unbeknownst to them, they're having lots of little micro sleeps. They come to and the ads are over, or, you know, so they're having a lot of micro sleeps that are eating into their complement of nighttime sleep. That's why they're awake early. And then, of course, the standard one is, you know, straight after lunch, sitting reading the Irish Independent or the Times in a lovely warm room, and they have a lovely little nap in the armchair for an hour. So they're still getting the same complement of sleep mm-hmm. as, say, some of us in the room are.
And what is your advice to someone if they say, I'm tortured by this, it's taken over my life, I can't stop thinking about it? Is
the sleep?
Yes.
Oh, you must go to your doctor.
Okay.
Because medication has a part to play in the management of sleep difficulties as well. Sleeping tablets are out there for that very simple reason. And the GP population now generally only prescribe sleep medication for 2 weeks at a time. That's kind of the general a statutory handout from the College of GPs in Ireland. It's to get you over the hump. It's to get you some sleep, because we become quite irrational about our sleep. And that's where the development of the annoyance about our bed and frustration associated with our bed start to set in. Because not being able to sleep does get us emotional. There's no doubt about it.
And so if somebody is struggling, do they, their first step is their GP?
Oh, absolutely.
And then they will be referred to someone like you who can help them further.
In honesty, cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia is now the gold standard in terms of treating insomnia.
Okay.
But it can take quite a while to get there. And immediately, I mean, I fully support people who are on medication, obviously, because I'm trained also in how to withdraw patients safely from medication, even long-term medication. It's about giving people back their confidence in their own sleep ability, really.
So fascinating. Thank you so much for coming on to my podcast. It was so lovely to get to know you today.
Good.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow Health with thanks to Emma. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It would really mean the world. And if you'd like to send me a message about any topics you'd like me to cover, please do so on Instagram at georgie.crawford. Talk to you very soon.